it was all there in our family when I grew up with it, you know.
Yeah.
Hearing about 84, what happened in 84, what were the things leading to the storming of Golden Temple, and after that the things that happened after that, and the genocide of Sikh people in New Delhi and all over the world.
Even the President Obama, when he went to India, he told in front of thousands of people that India will be divided among these lines if Indian government don't provide religious freedom to everyone.
The Golden Temple was packed with pilgrims. Then what they did, they closed the doors so no pilgrims can go out, and started the army activities, like shooting at them, bringing in the tanks, etc.
Today on Sunday Special, the struggle for basic human rights and the Sikh massacre of 1984, told by the Sikh people themselves. I'm joined in studio by Norwich businessman Swaranjeet Singh Khalsa, and visiting from Australia, Jaswinder, the son of a Sikh martyr who dared to speak out to fight back, dared to pay the ultimate price. Swaranjeet Singh Khalsa is with us again. You prefer to be called Singh or Swaranjeet?
Singh is good enough for now.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you've been with us before, and a lot of folks around town know you. You've been very active in the community. Of course, you're the owner of Norwich Town Shell, a very fine business up in Norwich Town. And I want to let you introduce a pretty distinguished guest that we have with us today. So why don't you go ahead and do that, Singh?
Well, thank you very much, Kevin, for inviting us here. And I think it's really very important that people should know who Sikhs are. So, because, you know, as you know, there's a lot of problem with the hate crime in America. Mm-hmm. Plus, there's a lot of historical events that happen in the Sikh history, which has been misinterpreted. So today we just want to give a little clarity. And today we have our guest here as Jaswinder Singh Maloya from Australia. It's pretty far away. He had like 24-hour flight. And he's a son of martyr Beant Singh, who punished Indira Gandhi for her sins. And today we will be talking about what really happened, what led to that event, and how it was being portrayed by the Indian media. So we'll just give a little overview as far you will ask us questions.
Excellent. Jaswinder, I'm just going to ask you, because I'm terrible with people's ages. How old are you?
I'm 33.
Okay, so 84... You were...
I was just 1 year old.
You were just 1 year old when all this happened.
Yes.
But you heard firsthand accounts. What's it like being the son of a religious martyr?
Yeah, it's been like, I feel proud. I get a lot of respect from my local community. So I have traveled to England, to Canada, and here in the States. Like, it's overwhelming. Oh, yeah.
And you're going to be in New York. You've been on a couple of... made a few TV appearances, I suppose.
Yes, last night we went to the local community TV, TV 84 and Just Punjabi, which are the Punjabi channels.
Okay.
And I went to, on Sunday, I went to a lot of gurdwaras, the Sikh temples, like five in total, all over New Jersey, Philadelphia, New York, Richmond Hill, Flushing, and yeah.
We're privileged to have you. What, I mean, growing up, did you have the life of a normal kid going to school and fooling around? Or did you start very early speaking about Sikhism and speaking about what had happened in 84?
Yeah, because the things that happened in '84 affected like the lives, our lives, my siblings, my mother. So it was all there in our family when I grew up with it, you know.
Yeah.
Hearing about '84, what happened in '84, what were the things leading to the storming of Golden Temple, and after that the things that happened after that, and the genocide of Sikh people in New Delhi and all over the world. So yeah, I grew up listening all about this.
So it was really kind of in your blood and in your heart from the time you were very small.
Yes, exactly.
I want to get into with both of you, and just pop in here when you want. We're very
sure.
casual around here.
Yep. Sounds good.
A little bit of the history. What is Sikhism for people who don't know? And what is a little bit of the history briefly before we
yep.
get into talking about 1984 and what's going on today?
Sure, Kevin. So Sikhism is the fifth largest religion, believe me or not, and we have more than 30 million followers. And Sikhism was started by Guru Nanak, and we call him as a founder of Sikhism. So Guru Nanak started Sikhism in 1469. So it's a pretty young religion if we talk about the other world religions. So our history is like 500 years. So it's a pretty young religion. And the basic theme for the religion was to create equality, because at that time in India, the communities were divided among the lines of casteism, color, and they were being discriminated on those lines. So our 10th guru, Guru Gobind Singh, said, you know, we'll make Khalsa, and on a Vaisakhi day of Vaisakhi, like we, if you remember, we had a Vaisakhi campaign in Norwich as well, where we have billboards on West Main Street and other towns to celebrate Vaisakhi. So on that day, Guru Gobind Singh, our 10th prophet, or you can say our 10th master, who were in the human form sent by God, you know, to promote the message of love and humanity. Mm-hmm. So he said, we'll make a religion, you know, where everybody will be equal. So he gave us concept of Singhs and Kaur. So that's why all the men have last name Singh and all the ladies have last name Kaur. Singh means lion, Kaur means princess.
Okay.
So just to give a little push, and we were given these articles of faith, just like a turban. It's like a crown for a Sikh. It's our spiritual crown. And at that time, it was just limited to kings and emperor. And just like in America, we have a right to bear weapon. He said, our Sikhs can also, you know, have kirpan, which is a religious article of faith. It's a small dagger, because it was also limited to only the high-profile people, and common person couldn't even have that. So basically, it was to empower the society, what he did, and to create equality. And eventually, it became, you know, it's a religion now, and we have more than 30 million followers. If we talk about America, we have our major population in New York, Washington, D.C., or if you go to the West Coast, in California, Fremont, Stockton. Stockton was the first Sikh temple, actually. It's a very cool fact. And we had a congressman, first Punjabi congressman, which was supported by the Stockton. And now it's getting very better for Sikhs, because now Department of Justice is helping Sikhs to promote the education about Sikhism. So we have different presentations in the different police academy, or with the judicial department. We have few presentations every year, so we can educate more and more people, because with the turban, as you know, it has been misinterpreted.
Right.
At least, like, especially with the 9/11, you know, there was a lot of hate crimes on Sikhs. And now if we talk about, like, what really happened in June 1984, we will have to go a little back.
Yeah.
So Punjab is a state in north of India. It was a country at one time. It was ruled by a Sikh leadership before the Britishers came. So in 1947, when Britishers gave the ruling back to India, you know, they invited like Sikh leadership, Hindu leadership, and Muslim leadership. Like, how you wanna get the division done? Because we want to leave, you know. So Muslim leadership said, you know, we want our own separate country. So they got Pakistan, which is now called Pakistan. And the Sikh leadership was like mostly blackmailed because we have our ties with the Hindus from long, long time, and our ninth guru, Guru Tegh Bahadur, sacrificed his life for the religious freedom and for the specifically religious freedom of Hindus. So Sikh leadership was convinced by Hindu leadership, you know, we'll live together as a one nation, and Sikh leadership was promised at that time that you will be given equal rights, you will have an autonomous state, which will be Punjab, your resources will be preserved, because Punjab is a very rich state, it has a very fertile soil, and Punjab is known as a land of five rivers. So as you know, water is one of the very major natural resource. And after the 1947, actually all the promises were broken, and even in the Constitution of India, still at this date, they have section 25B, which says Sikhs are Hindu. And this is like, you are, you know, you want to damage someone's identity, you want to wash away someone's identity. And we had a petition in White House, I think a couple years ago, and even the President Obama, when he went to India, he told in front of thousands of people that India will be divided among these lines if Indian government don't provide religious freedom to everyone. So I think that was a very big message what he gave to the people of India and to government of India, but still, you know, they don't really care. So
let me just get some clarity here, because when we say, or it was said at that time, that Sikhs are Hindus, are we crossing religious definitions with political definitions? In other words, a Sikh is a religion.
Sikh is an independent religion, I want to clear. It's not part of
Hinduism. Is a different religion.
It's a different religion, so they don't have any connection.
So, okay, but isn't it a little bit confusing to say that Sikhs are Hindus?
It is. Actually, the reality behind that is, you know, there are a lot of radical Hindu groups that don't want to, they want to declare India as a Hindu country. And they claim in public, like one of their leader of RSS, which is the one of the, you can say, the religious, known as Hindu religious group or whatever, and they declared in open that by 2020 we want to make India as a Hindu nation. So what that means, you're gonna kill all the Sikhs, or you're gonna kill all the Muslims, or all the Jews, or all the Christians? Like, in India, there are a lot of different religions that live there.
Yeah.
So that's like you're threatening someone's identity, and all Sikhs are been doing for so many years is trying to protect themselves, you know. And that's one of the major reasons why Sikhs are in America, England, Canada, all over the place, because they don't feel safe in their own homeland. So, you know, they're trying to come out, and that's where we stand so far.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. So bring us forward now as we move toward the 1980s, which was some 40 years later.
Yeah, so basically after what Indian government did, like what Constitution said and all the promises were broken, still Sikh leadership had a faith and they want to go with the legal means to proceed further and live within the boundaries of India. But our leader, Sant Jarnail Singh Khalsa Bhindranwale, he created a mass level awareness in people that, look, what's going on? You are being treated differently. You are, even if you commit the same crime, you are giving more punishment than the other people, you know? And your rights have been depleted. The resources of Punjab, water, is going to other states, and Punjab is not even getting compensated for it. And like Hindus have their religious places of worship declared as a holy city, why Amritsar, where we have our holiest Sikh temple, Golden Temple, why we cannot declare Amritsar as a holiest city? So there were like common human rights issues, and he created a mass like awareness among people, and I guess that's why government of India didn't like him, and they portrayed him as a bad guy. And as you know, governments have a power, all the media is with them, and you know, it's very possible that you can make wrong things right, and right things you can portray as wrong. Mm-hmm. So, and all this pressure was building up. And in 1984, you know, when Sikh were like fully aware and they wanted equal rights, you know, the government of India declared a war on Sikhs, and they attacked Golden Temple on the excuse that we want to get rid of that guy.
And that is your most sacred place.
That's our more sacred place, and they specifically chose the specific date where we have tons of thousands of people there, because that was our religious worship day, and they specifically chose that day and attacked Golden Temple and washed out everyone. Mm-hmm. A lot of people died, civilians died, all the worshiper died who just came to pay their homage, you know. And after that, worst thing ever. First of all, army is built to fight with the other countries. First time in the history, army of your own country is killing your own people.
Yeah.
You know, that's some, and you are using excessive force. You're using tanks, you're using helicopters, you know, you're using 7 different battalions for just to remove like 20 people. So this now is becoming a very hot topic, because they don't have to use all that forces, you know, if their intention were just to get rid of a couple people. But their intention were to kill the community and make sure nobody ever rises up and talk about human rights.
Was this, and Josh Windrow, I want you to feel free to jump in here.
Yes.
Was this sort of tantamount to a civil war? Did the Sikhs have their own army or their own forces, for example, that were fighting against the government?
Like, there were few people inside the like holiest shrine, Akal Takht Sahib, that's a golden temple, and just to get those people out, like they were inside, they weren't indulging in violence and in anything. So they were just because they used to live right next to the golden temple. Mm-hmm. So they, what we called is a saran, that's called a hostel. So where they used to live, and they just made an Indian government made an excuse just to flush out those 20 people. They stormed the whole temple and killed all the pilgrims who were celebrating, you know, the martyrdom day of the guru, fifth guru, Guru Arjan Dev Ji.
Were the pilgrims able to fight back? Did they have weapons?
No. They didn't have anything. They just went there to worship. And when the Indian army made sure, when the Harmandir Sahib, the golden temple was packed with pilgrims, then what they did, they closed the doors, so no pilgrims can go out, and started the army activities, like shooting at them, bringing in the tanks, etc.
And I would like to clarify, that was not the only one temple. They also attacked other 40 temples. So that shows their intentions, you know, that their intentions were to kill the community at the mass level.
And I just wanted to teach Sikhs a lesson that no one, like, you know, the like that no one rises again, because the spiritual leader, Sant Jarnail Singh Bhindranwale, like, he made Sikhs aware that it's a double standard by the government. The rights enjoyed by the majority and the rights enjoyed by Sikhs are different. Mm-hmm. Even in 1982, when the Asian Games were held in New Delhi, a Sikh with a turban wasn't allowed to go in there to see the games.
I know it's not a perfect world. I'm not naive, but it would seem that if members of a population or a segment of a population was stepping out of line, in this case, speaking up when the government didn't want them to speak up, if you were going to rationalize your actions at all as a government, you would go in and peacefully arrest those people and put them in jail and give them a trial in the courts, not go in with your army.
Yep.
That's the hypocrisy
exactly.
I'm seeing here.
That's it. They could have just send a couple police officers to make an arrest, you know. And they already arrested one time, and they had to give Sant Pendrawala back because they cannot prove anything against him. Because what he do, he just made people aware. He wasn't doing anything illegal. Mm-hmm. He was just making people aware of what's going on in your surroundings, you know?
What we would call free speech.
Yeah, which is a right.
Yep. And the other thing is, like, no charges were laid against him. Not even a single charge was laid against him before the storming of Golden Temple. So we weren't sure, the Sikh community wasn't sure why the Indian Army wanted to arrest Bindranwale. Like, if they wanted to arrest, they should, like, you should go through the proper channel, you know, lay some charges on him, then proceed to arrest him. And there were no charges. Still, there are no charges against him. They just stormed in, like, and did.
There was no warning.
Yeah, there was no warning. Happen. Exactly, yes.
And all the media was sent out of the Golden Temple complex. So nobody can do any coverage, and that news cannot really go to anywhere else.
Right.
But after 30 years, now things are coming up, popping up. And even the people in the military who did that action, they are speaking out. And they feel that they did something wrong, you know. But they had orders from Indira Gandhi. So what they going to do?
They didn't know.
You know, they have an order from Prime Minister. They have to do their duty, even if they don't want it to.
How many people died?
I think more than 15,000 people were in the Golden Temple at that time.
Goodness gracious.
Yep.
And that wasn't the end of it.
No,
that was just the beginning.
That was a beginning. They tried to, you know, have a lesson to Sikh community that you are not allowed to talk about equal rights. And if you want to live in India, you should live as a slave. And you should make sure that you are, you know, you are Hindus. You are not even Sikhs. You cannot even say that you are Sikhs. And even till now, when a Sikh person get married, he's married under a Hindu Marriage Act, which is also a wrong thing, you know. And in the other countries, Sikhs are given equal respect. In Canada, Sikhs are in the positions of military, high-ranking positions, and they're serving their countries very well. Even in America, we have soldiers serving our army in a good shape with their articles of faith. But India just... I don't know, it's very sad actually to be talking, but they just don't like Sikhs, and they want to wash out Sikhs and want to declare India as a Hindu nation. And the Sikhs will always be fighting against that oppression and for the basic human rights in their peaceful manner. And now the one of the major event that happened in November 1984. So they thought Sikhs have learned their lesson and now nobody gonna fight back. But there was a humiliation in the Sikhs that, you know, they destroyed our holiest place of worship. You know, something needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
But they were not in that capacity. But at the individual level, Martyr Beant Singh and Martyr Satwant Singh with Martyr Kher Singh, these were the three people, you know, and Beant Singh was in the security of Prime Minister Indira Gandhi at that time. And he respected Indira Gandhi as a mother figure. And he was one of the loyal security guard in the Indira Gandhi security, you know, places. And
this is just for our listeners' clarification, that was your father, right?
Jeff? Yes.
Yeah, so even, you know, we're going to talk that how the families are treated after somebody take any kind of action to punish anyone who had a sin, who made a big sin. Like Indira Gandhi killed a lot of people, you know. Mm-hmm. It was a very big thing. So when Beant Singh went to Golden Temple, because he heard that something happened, because he was in Delhi at that time, so he knew something happened in Punjab, which is not good, and he heard that Golden Temple has been destroyed, Akal Takht has been destroyed. So they went to see in Punjab Golden Temple, and when they saw the bloodshed in the Golden Temple complex, they saw the water body was all filled with the blood, and Akal Takht Sahib in a damaged shape, which, you know, that just created a some kind of, you can say, in their heart that, you know, that's really wrong what Indira Gandhi did. And we are, like, serving her and we are treating her as our mother. And, you know, we are very proud to be called as an Indian. But what, look, what Indian government has did to us. So that just that was just in his heart. And eventually, you know, one day he took action and, you know, he killed Indira Gandhi. But, you know, I don't know how many people can justify punishing somebody who have made such a big sin. But for Sikh nation, his father, Jaswinder's father, Martyr Beant Singh, you know, he's a martyr. And that's why Jaswinder has been regarded everywhere. And wherever he goes, people want to listen to him and, you know, want to know what happened. And, you know, they just love him because he's a son of martyr, because his father took revenge of Akal Takht.
Jaswinder, what happened to your father after he assassinated Indira Gandhi?
Like, he was shot by the other security personnel, and other Singh, Mate Satwan Singh, got injured. He got like around 7 or 8 bullets, if I'm not wrong. So he was hospitalized. He stayed in, like, he was unconscious for a week or so. And I, before that, like, after the storming of Golden Temple, my father felt humiliated, you know, as all the Sikhs all over the world started protesting all over, like, in front of Indian embassies all over the world, in the UK, over here, in Canada. And I still remember when my father, like, used to speak to my mother, he used to point out at me, like, he used to tell my mother that, like, the kids like Jaswinder, I was just 1 year at that time, weren't even spared, like, were killed by Indian army at that time in holiest shrine, you know. Like, even like children, like, for like, say, 1 or 2 weren't spared. They were even killed, and like they was like said they were terrorists or blah 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 whatever. But the Indian propaganda, like Indian government, they made propaganda out of, you know. So he used to get very emotional, like, you know.
I would think.
So that's why, like, he couldn't. He felt humiliated. So he So he said, like, he was thinking, like, yeah, so it was end of the world for him, you know. Like, he was wondering, if our holiest shrine isn't safe in this country, how can we will be safe, you know? The holiest shrine was destroyed, all the little kids, all the women, all the people at older age weren't spared. No one was spared.
I would like to add, even the dead bodies were not given to their families.
Really? Yes.
So they burned dead bodies in an unhumanly manner. They burned like 20 bodies at a time, and they weren't even treated with respect. Even the bodies weren't treated with respect. And when the people were asking, where's the body of our father? You know, he just went to Golden Temple to pay the homage. And, you know, and the government used to tell them, no, he was a terrorist and we don't know where the body is. We all burned them all. So that's like against any kind of human rights. You know, that's a human rights issue. Like,
and the pilgrims, most of the pilgrims were shot dead by the Indian army, and the pilgrims who survived were sent to jails. You know, were sent to prison, different prisons. So they stayed in prison for 4 to 5 years. You know, for nothing.
If you've just joined us, I'm speaking with Jaswinder, who is from Australia, who is the son of a Sikh martyr, and also Swarjeet Singh Khalsa, who is from Norwich. And we're talking about some pretty powerful stuff here.
So I would like to add, you know, we all love our families. Absolutely. You know, like, we all family people. For us, our family is the first priority, you know. And Beant Singh, you know, did something extraordinary. He didn't care about his 1-year-old son. First of all, I would like to tell, there are 3 siblings, and he was 1 year old at that time. His elder brother was 6 year old, and elder sister was 7 year old. So, you know, we can say that, you know, his heart was damaged in such a way that, you know, he didn't even care about his family at that time, and he, you know, wanted to do something for the community because he feel humiliated, as he told, you know. So we have to see that perspective as well, you know, that he could enjoy his he had a good job. Byung Singh has a good job. He could enjoy that job, but he still wanted to punish Indira Gandhi because you know, everybody wanted to punish him at that time. So we should respect that, and even if we don't justify his action, but what really happened after Indira Gandhi was shot, after she was declared killed?
That's where I want to go next, is bring us toward the current day, and what's the history been? Things didn't get any better, or did they?
Not really, not really. It's just they killed our movement for the freedom of Sikh nation, and now Sikhs outside India are struggling in a peaceful manner, and Sikhs inside, they are not even allowed to struggle or speak for their home country, Punjab, or what we call it as a Khalistan. So they have like a, there's no freedom of speech in India, but in outside India we have freedom of speech. So we are, you know, taking this movement in a positive manner, in a peaceful way, using the United Nations guidelines. And I would like to come back. So what really happened after Indira Gandhi was dead?
Yes, please.
So Indian politicians made a plan to wash out all the Sikhs all over the country, because, you know, they had a reason that, you know, you shooted our prime minister, so we're gonna kill all of you guys, which is not really acceptable, and it's against human rights, and it doesn't really make sense. You know, if somebody did something on his own,
you're gonna punish,
and you're gonna punish everyone in the community. But they had a genocide on India. They declared a genocide. They had a voter list, so they know where each and every Sikh is located. The criminals from the jails of India were released, and they were paid, and their jobs were to kill the Sikhs wherever they see Sikhs. And for 3 days in New Delhi and other states of India, this thing happened, and law enforcement was told not to interfere. So that's why, you know, we people in India don't even have any faith on even the law enforcement, because law enforcement was involved in the genocide at that time.
So the police were neutral, or the police sided with the government?
No, police were told by the Hindu leadership, because it's a Hindu majority country, and government at that time, it was a Congress government, and Hindus have their majority, and Hindu leaders have told the law enforcement not to interfere and let us do what we are doing. And even till now date, the criminals who did committed the genocide, who were killing Sikhs all over the India, they are still not behind the bars, even though Sikhs have all kind of proofs against them, and we have witnesses against them, but still they are not behind the bars. So that just shows the clear intention where Sikhs are going in India, and what will be the future in India if countries like America and other countries don't really interfere, because you know, there's no religious freedom in India at this time, which is very, you know, like demoralizing for all the people. Because I would like to say that more than 90% people who were Sikhs gave their lives for the Indian freedom at that time, you know.
90% of them.
Yes. So, you know, we wanted to live in India, but they just don't want us to live in India with equal rights. So that's very unfair, I believe, because, you know.
Is the United Nations having any effect on this situation?
Yeah, actually, United Nations, we have talked to United Nations, and they have did our case study. We provided them what really happened, and they said you are eligible for your own independent country, because you, like, they have a checklist, and you are good with the checklist because you have ruled your country before, Punjab, which is now a state in north of India, and you, genocide was committed on you, So that's one of the things. You have your different language, you have your different culture, different religion. So Sikhs are eligible for their own separate country, and according to United Nations guidelines, referendum can be done in Punjab, just like Scotland did it, you know, just like Quebec did it. But Indian government don't allow referendum, so that clearly tells us that India, who claim himself as a democratic country, is not really a democratic country. So it's not really a democracy, it's a hypocrisy what's going on in India. So I will request actually that Sikhs don't have anything against any kind of religion or anything against Hindu religion. You know, we treat everybody with respect, because that's what our religion teaches us. You know, our 10th guru had a very big message to Sikhs that, you know, recognize all human race as one. So in our hearts, we have nothing against anyone. What Sikhs are doing at this time is just working on the defense mechanism, how to defend themselves, because, you know, they are using media against us. They are telling our martyrs, portraying them as a terrorist. So, you know, and they can do at a mass level because they have power, they have money, you know. And as you know, Sikhs are minority in India. So that's what, you know, we really stand at this time. We want everyone's support, even the people of India. We want their support, that they should also speak up, you know. If this thing happens to Sikhs, it could happen to anyone, you know. Yeah. So if they don't speak up, then they are also becoming a part of those radical groups who wants to declare India as a Hindu nation, you know.
Just wonder, when you speak to people from India, and obviously there are a lot of folks who have immigrated from India, living in the United States and other places. What's their reaction to this?
Like, they really honor the actions took by my father. They really, like, honor. So, I'll give you an example. In 1989, my mother got elected as a member of parliament in Punjab because the people justified the actions of my father. So, we're like... So I have been to few places overseas, so I'm overwhelmed with the love and support given to me.
Good. Yep. As well you should be.
Yeah,
what about other governments? We talked briefly about the United Nations, but the government of England, the government of France, the government of the United States. I mean, we're still hearing about some pretty horrible acts of prejudice going on, even in the United States, sad to say.
Yes.
What is the... And you did talk about the statement that President Obama made when he visited India.
Yes.
How would you describe what world governments outside of the conference rooms of the United Nations, how are they reacting? Are they being helpful? Are they bringing pressure to bear? Are they sympathetic, or are they not doing enough?
Well... like, we have met our local congressman, Joe Courtney, and he was very sympathetic, and he knows what's going on in India is not a right thing, but, you know, that's something our other departments who are in this field to talk to other countries should do, and State Department, you know, and even like recently, our holiest scripture, Guru Granth Sahib Ji, was tore down and were, you know, in the streets of India. So more than 50 congressmen, and we have our Sikh caucus in America. So they wrote down a letter to the State Department that, you know, you should interfere and, you know, make sure all the rights are preserved. But what I personally feel is that, all our governments, you know, they are somehow don't want to get involved into all this. They are sympathetic. They know what's going on in India is wrong, and they... And I will just say we are lucky enough to have, you know, president who spoke out for Sikhs when he went to India. But Indian government don't really want to listen. And nowadays, as you know, there are political connections. We have our trading with India from America. So I think somehow they don't want to damage those kind of relationships. But eventually, you know, if these things will continue, I think a lot of countries going to support Sikh movement for freedom and for the basic human rights in the upcoming years. And, you know, we are working on our own personal level to create a little lobby. And, you know, and that's where we stand so far.
You know, we're sitting here talking, and I'm thinking there are a lot of different ways of getting a message across, and the media is one of those ways, obviously books and history and teaching in schools, and I find myself wondering, and perhaps I'm ignorant here, and you can set me straight, but has anybody, Hollywood or anybody, put out a movie or a documentary that, you know, that people have seen? I haven't noticed anything about the massacre and about what happened in India.
Not at the Hollywood level, but there are tons of documentaries made by different, you can say, human rights organizations. And
about something really
boring. Even from the BBC, there are a couple of documentaries. As you know, they don't want to damage their relationships with India, so they have shown almost 80% truth, but somehow they don't want to use the proper kind of wording when they, you know, refer someone in their documentaries. But no matter what, we cannot justify the actions of Indira Gandhi. Like, she destroyed our holiest shrine and killed a lot of people, innocent people. We cannot justify that action. Or we Indian government, how Indian government is going to justify the Sikh genocide of November 1984? You know, like, these things are not justifiable at any kind of human rights, you know, if we talk about human rights or with any kind of human rights organization, they cannot justify the actions of Indian government at any level, you know.
And I'm assuming there's never been any kind of official retraction or apology on the part of anyone from the Indian government. Is that a correct thing?
Not in the real terms, actually, you know. Like, now the Home Minister of India, I think, Rajnath, he said, you know, it was a genocide, which is a good thing. At least they are recognizing the fact that that killing was a genocide.
Yeah.
And
word to use.
Yeah, but
that's what it was.
Yeah, but in America, we are getting a huge response. In California, at the state level, they have declared it November 1984. As a Sikh genocide. Different cities like San Jose, California, Fremont, a lot of different cities at their level did that. And even we commemorated 30th anniversary of Sikh genocide in Norwich. So, you know, we got the proclamation from City of Norwich declaring month of November as a Sikh awareness month. So I think as more and more education is going to the people, they are showing more sympathy and what really happened. Because, as you know, when you kill some community at that mass level, it took them 30, 40 years just to stand up on their feet, just to feed their families. You know, if you destroy their businesses, you kill their family members, you know, it takes time for community to stand up. Yeah. But now I think our community is well settled in outside India, and inside India, people are working to make it better for them. But now that's why more knowledge is coming out, and you know, we are getting more and more support from the people that what really happened, you know, was wrong, and now people are speaking out, actually, so which is a good thing.
Is there a sizable Sikh community in Australia?
Yeah, it's like it's growing, you know. Actually, it started recently. They want many Indians over there, so in start of 2004 and 5, many students went there for to study, and now it's pretty big community over there as well, all over in Melbourne, in Sydney, Perth, Brisbane, pretty much everywhere. Yeah.
Talk about Swaranji. Talk about. I'm used to calling you Swaranji.
That's fine. That's fine by me.
Called you when I first met you. But anyway, talk about our area right here, Eastern Connecticut, South Central Massachusetts. How many Sikhs do they have? Temples? Do they have congregations?
We have temple in Boston area. We have three temples in Boston, and one of them is made by American Sikhs. So it's really cool to see people from the other religions are like coming to Sikhism and following the Sikhism in a proper way. And if we talk about Connecticut itself, now we have like we'll be having 5 Sikh temples overall Connecticut. Most of them are in the Hartford County, one in Southington, one in Windsor. Actually, now there will be 2 in Windsor near the airport. So it's very convenient for all the people who travel. You know, they can go to temple, and as you know, in the temples we have free kitchen, so everybody's invited. You know, we have a langar, which means community kitchen, and everybody can enjoy the vegetarian Punjabi meal. And we have one temple in Norwalk and one in Hamden. So it's growing. We have almost, you can say, about 1,000 families if we talk about Eastern Connecticut and Massachusetts area. Yeah, so it's a sizable population, and more people are becoming active to, you know, properly educate people about Sikhism, you know.
What is the population of Sikhs worldwide?
Worldwide, it's around more than 30 million now.
And in India,
we have almost 80% of the people live in India at this time.
Oh.
And 20% of the people came outside India, because you need resources to come, you know, travel and
So it, but it doesn't sound like there's a mass exodus from India on the part of the Sikhs.
Well, they want to come out, and even in America, you know, like people who were being tortured by Indian government, they got political asylum in America and other countries, because, you know, they were also human rights activists, and, you know, India just don't want to see anybody speaking up for any kind of human rights or Sikh rights or for the rights of Punjab or for the people of Punjab. So that's very unfortunate. And the people who want to do all that, you know, they are coming out, because it's just, you are taking their right of freedom of speech, you know. So that's why one of the reason we have more and more people coming outside the India to the different countries. And in Canada, if you see, like, it's a third language is Punjabi. If you go to Vancouver, you will see the boards, billboards in Punjabi language.
Oh, seriously,
even the street names.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, that's this, people will think this is an odd question, but Josh Winder, what about support from other religions? And I guess when I say support, I mean help in educating. Supposedly all real religions stand for love amongst mankind and basic civil rights. Are you getting any help from, let's say, just the Roman Catholic or the Jewish community or whatever?
Like, to be honest, in India, all the minorities are suffering as Sikhs are. So we are getting support from the Muslims, from Jainists, from Buddhists, you know. So all the small minorities in India, like, they are all on the same boat, you know, because as Swaranjit told mentioned before, the RSS, they wanted to declare India as a Hindu state by 2020. So they are all in the same boat, and we can feel the pain, especially of the Tamils, you know. They are all supporting our cause.
We're talking about Sikhism. We're talking about the Sikh massacre that occurred in India in 1984 with Josh Swinder, who is our distinguished guest from Australia, and also with Swaranjit Singh from here in Norwich, a businessman in our community and very active and very vocal. I would like to know what resources are available for people to learn more about the massacre and about Sikhism and about what's going on now.
Well, we have a couple websites, like 1984 genocide website. You can even Google it, 1984 Sikh genocide, and you will see a lot of material available to read and to learn more what really happened. There are some documentaries on YouTube as well if you write 1984 Sikh genocide. So that's one of the good source that you can learn more about what really happened. But if you go to Sikh temples, you know, they'll be able to tell you much better, because they are the victims. All, you know, people who came here, most of the immigration started after 1984. So you can easily meet the families, and you even sometimes get a chance to see the families who were in the Golden Temple at that time when, you know, attack happened. Or you get a chance to meet families who were in November 1984 Sikh genocides. You know, they will tell you how their houses were being, you know, mobbed, came to their house, attacked their house, you know, looted them. And, you know, rapes were being done on Sikh women. So it's a lot of pain which is inside the Sikh community, because, first of all, actually nobody has done anything on these lines of action. People who committed genocide are being given political power by Indian system. You know, they are not behind the bars, but they are given security and they are on their high political, like, thrones, you can say. So, you know, like, justice has not been delivered. So if I think justice will be delivered, it will, you know, justice will lead to the peace. But maybe, you know, they just don't want to provide justice. They want to, you know, want us to be keep fighting for our basic human rights.
Define justice?
First thing is, you know, if you see you do something wrong, you should accept that. You know, if you were speeding, you know, and officer tell you, you know, were you speeding? And if you say, officer, no, I wasn't speeding, you know. So that's not a good thing. Mm-hmm. So, right. That, you know, first of all, you should accept you made a mistake. You made a mistake to attack Golden Temple. It was all calculated and it was all pre-planned what they did. And in November, they should apologize what they did was wrong. You know,
and discontinue the behavior,
and discontinue that kind of behavior which is leading to these kind of events. And till now in India, you know, there are a lot of people behind the bars and they don't even have any kind of proof against them, and they're still behind the bars.
Really?
So, you know, it was a mass movement at one point recently with the hunger strike, because that's one of the peaceful way to protest, you know. But they just don't want to listen anything.
And I would like to add, after, as Sorenjit mentioned, after 1984, like most of the Sikhs, like they flew from India because they weren't safe. So they came here to the United States, to the United Kingdom, and to Canada, and they got political asylum over there. And even the government over here in Canada and in England acknowledged that Sikhs in India are, you know, are in danger, you know. Mm-hmm. That's why they were granted political asylums. Mm-hmm. And on the sad thing is, like, if, for example, if one person has been given a political asylum, rest of the family still isn't allowed to travel to Punjab, you know. So mm-hmm. they have been blacklisted, so they can't go to their homeland. So that's another, you know, another way of another way from the Indian government to suppress Sikhs even overseas, you know.
Do Sikhs want their own country?
Yes, they definitely do.
Actually, we didn't wanted it, but now this is not really a demand. That's a need, that we need some place where our religion is safe,
yeah.
Where our history is safe, you know. So we need a place where people can safely live and practice their religion, and nobody interfere in their religious matters, you know. Mm. So,
is it a fair thing to say that the chances of that happening are quite slim?
Well,
or do you think it's possible?
I think when more and more education will come all across the world, like it's coming now, you know, there's more infiltration of information now, and media is becoming a big tool that you can, you know, tell your message at a broader level. So I think with more and more information, when it comes out, I think there's quite a possibility, you know, one day, you know, Sikhs will have their own homeland.
Like, at least at the moment, the government over here and in, like, Canada and UK, they acknowledge that there's something going on in Punjab, which is against the Sikhs. You know, they are not in favor. Like, they know about 1984, what happened over there, and the massacre over there, the genocide that happened in Punjab. Government are aware of that, so that's a big achievement for the Sikhs that they have made the government aware. That's a different thing. Nothing like, because India has now become a superpower, so it's a different thing. They can't, you know, pressurize the Indian government, etc. But Sikhs have made, like, they have achieved something to make the government aware of over here that there is urgent need in Punjab. The things need to be sorted out over there.
It can't just be left the way it is for eternity.
But I would like to add that now our freedom movement or civil rights movement is in hands of youngsters, and they are well educated, and they are following all the international rules, regulation, and we are trying to achieve peace and justice, you know, in a legal manner. So eventually, you know, legal fights might take a little longer, but you know, they are more efficient, I will say, and let's see how it goes.
Is this history being taught in our schools and universities?
At the Sikh level, you know, Sikh institutions level. But how at India level you can really teach these things, because then Indian government is on the bad side if you speak the truth,
okay,
you know.
But even in this country, for example.
In this country, I think there's one religious class which is not really compulsory, but in the world religion class, Sikhism is inside that world religion class. So, but we need more and more education, actually.
Well, that's what I'm wondering, because regardless of how you view what happened, and I don't know how you could view it any other way than that it was a horrible, I could even use the word Holocaust, I suppose. I know that's a sensitive word to people, but it's part of history.
It is a part of history.
Same as Benedict Arnold's part of history here locally.
Yes, and we are getting huge support from, especially from the Jewish community, because similar things happen to them as well.
Yeah, there's a parallel.
You know, so, but I guess, I don't know, I should say that or not, but they were lucky enough to at least create Israel, which is their homeland, you can say. But, you know, we need...
I know you well enough to know you mean it in a loving way.
So, yeah, but, you know...
It's a touchy thing.
It is, actually. Yeah. But more and more information is coming, like museums has been created within the Sikh temples to tell people what really happened in 1984, you know, and we welcome everyone, actually, whoever want to learn more, they're more than welcome to come in our Sikh temples, and we will provide them the education, like what really happened. And thank you for inviting us today, actually.
Yeah. I'd like to see this taught, you know, in a fair way in schools and universities, and that's what sort of predicated that question, because I'm not sure that it is. Jaswinder, what can people do? Should they be writing to their congressmen? Should they be... What should people listening... What can they do to help the Sikh people?
Like, first of all, like, the people who are listening should know the history, should go to Sikh temples, get to know the history better, and write to their local leaders over here to make them aware the atrocities the Sikh community has gone through, and make all their leaders aware of that, and so all the leaders should know what's been going on over there, and should, like, you know, do their part, whatever, like, they can put pressure on the Indian government to stop the atrocities which are still happening in Punjab, unfortunately. So all the local government, all the local leaders from the whatever top should come and help the Sikh community at the moment. And
education seems like
education is a very big tool actually, and we at our own personal level in our city level, you know, we educated our mayor what really happened, and city council members, and we expect that they should declare month of November as a month Sikh genocide, like 1984, all the massacre as a Sikh genocide, because now we have enough paperwork for them, and we have references from other cities who have declared a Sikh massacre of 1984 as a genocide, and that's also a very big thing, because over here we don't have any kind of pressure at our city level, and we are not getting funded from Indian government, so we can, you know, read, we can do our study, and we should at least show the Sikh community that we are with you in this, and we support your human right that you are fighting for, the basic human rights, you know, and that's one way we can show our support at the city level to the Sikh community. But writing to the congressman, learning more about it, and discussing more about it, because thing is that if that happened in India in these recent times, you know, 1984, it can happen somewhere in the other part of the world too, if we don't speak up. So as a big community, we all should feel that same pain, what really that people have to go through. You know, even like I am sitting here, I could be working, I could be making money, but these things are very important to be addressed, and we cannot ignore these things. So as a human right activist, we all shouldn't ignore that. We shouldn't say, you know, that's not our
somebody else's
problem. That's not a people of America problem. Yes, it's a problem. It's a very big problem. We as a people of America, we claim that, you know, we stand with justice for all the people, you know, and those are also our people, you know, it's like you are killing a mankind.
Yeah.
So we should all speak up and educate ourselves, and, you know, I think that will make a difference.
Here. Open your heart.
Yes.
Open your mind.
Yep.
And walk the walk. It's great to talk. Important, very important.
Thank you.
But to take action on the things, whether it's this issue or something else, that we believe in, and we know there is a difference between right and wrong.
Yes.
So there's my little part of it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I know you're pretty good about giving out your phone number. May I do that now?
Sure.
I help people contact Swaranjeet Singh, 757.
291-5211.
There you go. 5211. And just wonder, do you like people? Can people email you? Are you open to dialogue with people?
Or? Yes, yes.
I know you're a busy guy.
No. So people can email me at Jesse Maloya. So JASSIMALOYA @gmail.com. So I'm more than happy to let people know each and everything what happened, because I'm raised in that family where 84 was, you know, everywhere, you know. So it wasn't like it. 84 is in a family. I was brought with it, you know. 84.
It's as if it were yesterday, I'm sure.
Yes.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah. So it's gonna stay like that for the rest of my life as well.
So you're going to be in the U.S. for another week or two?
Yeah, for another week, so I'm flying back on 7th.
Good, good.
There's a very big gathering in Yuba City in California.
I know and Yuba City well.
Yeah.
Very close to you.
Actually, it's pretty interesting to see
more. Call it Yuba City.
Oh, really? Yeah, more than 150,000 people show up in that rally, you know, every year. So he's been invited on that rally.
Excellent.
To address the people.
We do have listeners all over the country. When is that going to be?
November 6th.
Okay.
Yes.
Sunday.
Yes.
So it's a very big event, and a lot of folks come from all over the world to attend that program. you know, and it's open to everyone, and you can go enjoy the foods, meet the people, have education for your mind, spiritual education. So there are a lot of different events on that day, you know.
And Sikhs have wonderful food. That's part of your tradition.
Yes, usually we have a vegetarian Punjabi meal prepared by, you know, all the volunteers, and it's a free meal. Everybody's invited to sit together as a family and enjoy the meal, and we can, you know, discuss our, you know, talk to each other, and, you know, it's a basic, like, we should treat each other with respect. That's the main theme behind it.
Yeah. And every time I speak with, well, usually it's been you, but I know you have a few family members here in town that I've met, and that always seems to be the central message, is that everybody is treated with respect.
Yes.
And I love that. I think that's important. Thank you, Jaswinder. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having us.
The honor of your visit. And Saranjeet, we'll be seeing you around the hood.
Yep. Thank you very much. I'm available to you all the time.
likewise. Thanks.
To contact Swaranjeet Singh Khalsa, call 757-921-5211. To learn more about Sikhism online, visit Sikhs.org. That's Sikhs.org. For Sunday Special, I'm Kevin Harkins.
I bow to you, Vaheguru. I bow.